everyone, and welcome to What the Fuck's Up podcast. I'm your host, Caitlin Kelly.
And I'm the other host, Nina Barnett.
She is. Nina, what the fuck's up?
Okay, this is so exciting. You guys are going to be like, this girl's obsessed with this fact. So I was bridesmaid for my friend Marianne and Robert. Congratulations to the happy couple. And I was sitting at the rehearsal dinner and they bring out the main course and there is, you know, like steak, asparagus, yeah, all the things, the classic rehearsal dinner meal. And I, you know, am like slightly chuckling to myself and one of the other bridesmaids comes up from her table, walks across the room and goes, "Thank God we're eating asparagus." And I was like, that is so loyal. Yes.
Was it because she had listened?
Yes. She was God. She was like, if you know, you know. And
if
I was like, yes.
You know. Oh my God. Amazing. I need to just stock up on asparagus.
Yeah, I know. I mean, but I will say there was like two pieces of asparagus. So
yeah,
I
was going
to
say it probably wasn't like a ton. It was like a little side like garnish.
Yeah,
almost.
Pretty much. Yeah. But I ate every bit of it and I felt great the next day.
You always feel great the next day.
I will say that was an early wake up call. Jealous. Being a bridesmaid is so rewarding, but also really exhausting.
And then you saw John Mulaney. Is this in Raleigh?
Yes, in Raleigh, because I wasn't going to be in New York for when he was in New York. And so went and saw John Mulaney in Raleigh and it was fantastic. Like truly so good.
So, okay, this is the thing. I was such a John Mulaney stan, but I just, Anna Marie Tendler, like I feel for her so hard. Like there's no chance he didn't cheat on her when he was in rehab. And that was his whole personality. Like, what does he do stand up about now?
It was about...
it was all about him being the good guy.
Well, it was all about like rehab and going to rehab. It was hilarious. Like, I genuinely was in tears multiple times. I mean, he is one of the comedians that like inspired to get me into comedy.
Yeah.
Be so... honestly, he could do no wrong in my eyes, which is kind of bad. But... he's one of those people that I'm like, I genuinely love, and not in a romantic sense. I'm just like, I love this guy and he's always funny and he's always on it. And I mean, he seems like he's doing well and he's funny about it. And it was just such a good show. I brought my family and I would say every single member
of my
family.
You brought your family? Did you buy tickets for everyone?
No. No, I didn't. I could not afford that.
You were like, I physically went with them, but I brought them.
Yeah, I was like, I encouraged them to purchase tickets in the same row. And by encourage them, I mean, I also encouraged them to buy my ticket.
It was highly encouraged.
Highly encouraged. But it was truly so good.
Did he seem like he's doing well?
Yeah, honestly. I mean, and he acknowledges the fact that he's not like jumping around the stage anymore. And he's like, because that was drugs.
Oh my God.
And it's really funny. But a lot of it, a lot of it's about like the intervention and the, you know, going to rehab and all this stuff. But it is really, I mean, it's just so good. I almost bought merch. Like, that's where I was at.
Guys, buy our merch. Let's just use that as a plug. We're about to get our own merch.
Yeah, we were just talking about it.
Yeah, we still have to purchase it. So if we're, you know, purchasing it, you guys should definitely purchase some.
Great gift for
great
like
gift
friends.
I mean, the red is just so good.
It is so good. And so is the pink. Honestly, it's a great gift when you're going to a birthday party for a friend and you know everyone's bringing like some bottle of wine or something. Yeah. This is a kind of cool, better thing to get.
Also with the tote bags, so easy.
So easy. If you're in New York, reusable, you know, you can take that to Trader Joe's.
Yeah, you could take, I mean, you wouldn't be able to get that much.
You'd be getting just your lunch. You could take it to Trader Joe's, but it's
cool
a lunchbox.
Look. Like, yeah, like a lunchbox. It could probably fit a laptop, but like that's it.
Yeah, maybe an iPad if you're cool.
iPad. Definitely could fit an iPad. Yeah. A book. You're going to the park. Journal. To read on a nice day.
You writing your jokes down?
Yep. We could fit so many things in our cute little canvas bag.
I mean, I'm thinking the opportunities are endless.
It's basically like the Mary Poppins bag, but different. Oh my God. Okay. Also, quickly, we should talk about the Kardashian wedding because.
How do you feel about the outfits?
Okay, her dress, it just was not it. But I kind of knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, like, I appreciate and respect the different take on things.
I just, okay, this is the thing. I don't understand the short dress thing.
Neither.
Like, I feel like this is the one time you're supposed to ball out. And I feel like she kind of tried to do it with the veil. Yeah. And almost make the veil like an extension of her outfit.
Yeah.
But it just didn't really work.
You also know that that dress was so expensive. And I'm like, you don't. I mean, like, she looked great, you know, as a person. But like the outfit,
the outfit just wasn't flattering.
It's not. And also she's pretty short, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm really short and I'm just like, oh, I would never. Because here's my thing also. Comedian brain. Like knees are really weird.
They are so weird.
They're so weird. That's why most comedians. No, I'm just kidding. It is kind of an unwritten rule, but it is also a lot of comedians are like, I don't want to show my knees on stage.
Oh my God.
And you'll notice it now.
Wait, also the last thing about the Courtney Travis wedding, it being sponsored by Dolce & Gabbana. Like, people are upset.
Oh, I didn't realize it was like straight up sponsored.
Yeah. Well, having a sponsored wedding just feels a weird. Little trashy.
It feels like fake.
It's very weird. Like everything like was tagged Ugh. With them. Everyone was wearing it in the family.
Can you imagine your wedding hashtag being like hashtag Dolce & Gabbana?
But also they, I forgot which of the founders it was, but made really like racist and homophobic comments. Ooh. So they're also kind of like meant to be canceled. So people were very upset. Like I was watching tough. A lot of TikToks about people like popping off about it. See, look at this. Dolce & Gabbana's history of racism and homophobia.
That's
a whole
not it.
Article.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So for them to pick them is pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's a little tough.
Yeah.
Also, like, it's tough to pick a sponsor.
Yeah.
Like, what? For your wedding? I mean, depending. I would absolutely, like, if the, you know, like tourism sites, tourism centers, whatever they're called, will have ads on TV. Like if the tourism center of Italy wanted to sponsor me, I'd be like, okay.
I'm gonna contact Italy right now.
Italy.
I actually am about to buy flights to go
to Italy.
Capri. Yeah.
When?
The end of July.
Damn.
I need to get them.
I'll be here
yesterday.
Baking, sitting with the rats. I saw the funniest tweet the other day. Somebody was like somebody was like, the best thing about New York is just when I thought I was getting a little scared walking home at night, as if it knew, a rat came out of the trash and walked alongside me my entire way home and dropped me off at my door. And I was like, that's so oddly comforting and so real. We have a rat on our street named Templeton, and he always walks me home.
You named the rat?
In my defense, it was not me. It was my friend Betsy. Betsy and Ellen named it Templeton. But
Templeton's an amazing name
for the
rat.
Isn't it so good? And when we don't see Templeton, we're really worried something happened to him.
Oh, my God.
He's put on a couple pounds, though.
Templeton is not having a hot boy summer. A hot rat summer.
A hot rat summer. Hot rat summer, yes.
But guys, we have Gigi Robinson on today. She was recently featured in Sports Illustrated and has lots of content about it. So
no big deal.
Be sure to check it out. And yeah, as per usual, please rate, review, subscribe, tell a friend about the podcast because we're trying to blow up this season and we have some pretty cool people coming on. So yeah, without further ado, here's today's episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome to What the Fuck's Up podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Caitlin Kelly.
And I'm the other, Nina Barnett.
And today we are lucky enough to be joined by Gigi Robinson. Gigi is a digital artist, health and wellness advocate, and podcaster. So welcome, Gigi. What the fuck's up? How are you?
Hello. Thanks for having me. I am good. It's been crazy. I have been traveling and things are all over the place, but now I'm back in New York and everyone and their mom wanted a meeting with me today, including you guys. So, hi.
Well, we're so happy we got some of your time. Yeah, so for people listening, I mean, we'll get into more of your background, but you just came back from the Sports Illustrated swimsuit search, which is amazing. I do want to hear all about that and how you like even heard about that, what that whole process was like, what being there was like, because that's
a huge accomplishment. Basically, guys, yeah. Gigi is officially famous now.
Yeah,
if she didn't have enough accolades on her website.
Thank you. I appreciate the kind words.
Of course.
But it's like, it's really interesting on the note of like, I guess accruing these accolades is just like, it's happening digitally. So yeah. Like, it doesn't really feel like they're actually happening. It's more of like, I've done it and then I've moved on and then there's something else and then I've moved on. But since the pandemic has kind of like, I guess, shifted and there's less, you know, precautions and less regulations, the Sports Illustrated Swim Search was something where like I could actually go and do it. And yeah. There's going to be like a tangible product, which will be the photos out in the magazine and online in like a couple of weeks, which is like crazy. I can't believe that already a month and a half has flown by. But I found out about the search through this girl who actually went to USC, who I met at an event with the Female Quotient Lounge at USC.
And yeah, I forgot to mention for everyone listening that Gigi went to LaGuardia, a fellow New Yorker, and then USC yes. for college. So
yes, yeah, but and I'm currently at USC getting my master's, so I'm still heavily involved. Actually, you didn't know that?
No, what are you getting your master's in?
A master's of science in integrated design, business, and technology focused on innovation and future forward thinking. So I know Damn. That was like a mouthful.
Is that something you created? Like, does that just exist in the world as a thing yeah. to get
that exists as a legit program from USC. Like, I think wow. it's officially declared one of the longest program names in history because it's like, it's actually called the Jimmy Iovine and Andre Young, and Dre as in Dr. Dre,
who
founded the Ivan Young Innovation School, School of Innovation, Business, you know, Design and Technology, Masters of Science in Integrated Design, Business and Technology. So it's just like, what the fuck, like wild. But that was something they actually talked about during the admissions, which was really funny. But yeah. I don't even know how he got down this rabbit hole of talking.
Yeah, sorry, back to Sports Illustrated. So so you were talking to someone from USC and they were like, you have to do this.
No, not at all. I met her at this thing called the Female Quotient Lounge. It was like a yes. panel happening on women's empowerment back in like 2019 in the fall before the mm-hmm. pandemic. And I was just like, oh, she's cool. So I followed her. And she is more like health and wellness and fitness and stuff like that. Yeah. So kind of in my field on terms of like mental health and fitness, I guess, mm-hmm. but I'm not in fitness at all. Anyway, and she ended up submitting last year and wins rookie 2021. And I was like, okay, if she can do it, so can I. Like, literally, like, why the fuck not? And I saw that back, I think, in the summer last year, like in July or August. Like, they usually announce it in August. So I was like, okay, whatever. And then in September, I was down in Florida and I was having my like moment to like reconnect with myself. I was staying with my family down in Del Rey and I was able to like go down to the beach and like ground myself and meditate and like focus on like my mental health and wellness. And then I was out with a friend and we're talking about the future and I'm like, yeah, like I'm gonna be on a magazine or like in a magazine. And they're like, haha, Gigi. And I'm like, no, like it's actually gonna happen. And then a couple months go by and I was still thinking about it, but I hadn't heard, like, I was researching it. Like, it was something I knew I was going to do. Like, I felt called mm-hmm. to do it and compelled to, like, be a part of the movement of, like, Sports Illustrated Swim and see if there was a way that I could, like, kind of intertwine disability and invisible conditions and chronic yeah. illness with, like, beauty and empowerment. So then December comes along and I still hadn't heard anything from them, but I was back down in Florida again because you guys know I love to go down to Florida for the weekend. And I was there for art.
Every yeah, New Yorker during the pandemic literally. In the winter.
Yeah. They're just like, let me get out of New York City and go to
some
Florida.
Source of vitamin D.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I basically go down there with my friend for Art Basel. I get like hired by Playboy to make content at their party, which was insane.
Okay, how did that happen? I need to you literally all these things just like come
just
about
a casual,
for you. Yeah, it's like
Playboy content.
Yeah, Playboy just reached out to me, you know, like
I mean,
a normal Monday.
If
Playboy
I'm
hasn't
fully,
reached out to me yet. I'm actually
fully
really
transparent.
Yeah.
I write it in my journal. And like, I like already believe that I have these things before they happen. So like, it's not like, oh, like I want to do this. It's like, if I get to do this, it allows me to blah, blah, blah. And I think but about that intentionally. Did you reach
out to someone first, or they just reached out to
they
you?
Just find you? The they universe just found
it was a very serendipitous, coincidental moment where someone I knew was like, hi, there's something pressing and I can't come down to Miami. I see that you're down in Miami. Can you go shoot this Playboy stuff? And I was like, wow. Word. And then they were like, okay, cool. And then that just happened. And now, like, potentially could... You know, never know. Like, I could go to other events and work with them. Yeah. So, yeah, awesome. And I went to their office recently. But anyway, super fun, very crazy, and wild, definitely. But yeah, so down when I was down there, I like, again, had this calling. I was like, you know what? I don't know what the submission process is going to look like, but based on last year's submissions, I'm going to have to submit a video. So let me like shoot some content of me walking down the beach, like in my bathing suit, like, I don't know, just like not in a bathing
definitely
suit.
Definitely helpful
with
the
sunshine.
To have like a Florida place for that too. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, like, yeah.
It would be like me walking on the sidewalks of
walking in my like really small one bedroom.
In a bikini, like out in New York City. And I was just like, okay, let me just like do this. And I had no direct prompt. I had nothing in mind, honestly. And then basically I had planned to shoot more, but then Omicron happened in New York City for like all of December. And then I think it was late December or early January, they opened up the submissions and you had to do it through their app. So I was like, okay. And I had just onboarded a copywriter and a new video editor that was like editing for me. And we all kind of like sat down and brainstormed and wrote this script. I, you know, shot some extra footage of me, you know, doing daily things like scrolling on my phone, posting, shooting content, writing on my whiteboard, like filling my medicine, dressing and undressing my messy room, like showing those transparent moments. And we just encapsulated it into a very quick, like a minute and a half video.
Yeah.
And we incorporated that OG footage. And then I posted on LinkedIn and tagged Miss MJ herself, who, for those that don't know, is the editor-in-chief of Sports Illustrated Swimsuit. And within 10 minutes, she ended up sharing it to her network, saying, like, I am blown away by the women in the Swimfluence network. Like, bravo. This is, like, amazing. And I was literally like, shut the fuck up. Like, what just happened?
So you're like, I got the gig.
I wasn't. No, I mean, I was just like, I have no idea. Like, she might share people like constantly. Like, I didn't know what to expect, but I was like, oh, okay. Like, I stalked her other posts. I was like, does she post about these girls a lot? And like,
yeah,
like,
I would have done the same thing immediately. Yeah.
So I was literally like, oh my God, this is crazy. And then, you know, and I submitted on the last day too, because I didn't want like anticipation. I was like, if I'm submitting, I'm submitting on the last day. I'm going out with a bang. Like, I don't want to wait, you know, all these extra days. So I submit on the last day. And 2 days later, I get a message and was like, hi, we want to interview you. You're, you know, a semi-finalist, I guess, and we want to hear more from you or something like that. And then you get in this Zoom call with like all these other girls and everyone just kind of like talks for like 2 minutes. And it's like kind of intimidating because you're like in a Zoom call and you're like, hey, what's good? And then you don't hear back at all. And then everyone's just like, what the fuck? Like, what did we just do? Like, who did we just talk to on this Zoom call? And then I,
again. So they're
again,
interviewing you with other people?
Yeah. So you're, and it's not so like a weird casting where you're like in a bikini. You're just like talking to them, like as if I'm talking to you about like my just life, shopping, my background, my video, whatever. And they're just like, oh, why did you apply? Or like, what's important to you? How's your background relate? So
that's so awkward with the other people around, though. And you're like, who's gonna win it out? Duking it out.
I mean, like,
together.
Yeah, it's interesting, but I think it's something that also really prepares you for being in the group environment with the other girls and potentially being in front of cameras and crews and like being able to just that's like true. Shamelessly yeah. like talk about yourself, not being nervous, just being like, hell yeah, like let's fucking go, you know, instead of like, oh no, I'm so nervous. Yeah.
And like how many semifinalists were there?
I think about 60 or 100.
That's a large Zoom call.
Yeah.
And then how many ended up making it?
12.
Wow.
So about 10%, I would say, or less. So yeah. So then, get this, I'm in Miami yet again.
This is your lucky
and
place.
I get the phone call. And I'm like, why is Florida the place that literally like made all of this happen? Like, what the heck? So I get the call.
I'm going to Miami right now. I'm booking my flights.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm on the way.
I'm so jealous. Yeah. I know. I was with my friend. I don't think I'll ever forget this moment. But like, I genuinely was like, I started shaking. Like, she thought she was going to have to drive me to the hospital because she didn't understand what was going on. Because I didn't put it on speaker right away. Because also leading up to it, I was answering every spam call, opening every email. Like, I was literally like, I have no idea what area code they're going to call from or whatever. And so then finally this like number pops up. It's a New York area code. I'm like, okay, let me answer. It's a Sunday. Like, who's calling me on Sunday? Spam calls usually happen on weekdays. So I got it, and it was just – it was amazing, and I was like, oh, my God, pull over the car, pull over the car. And we just, like, get out, and I'm just, like, screaming. And anyway
– this sounds like the equivalent of, like, the only thing I could compare this to in my life is either A, getting a big guest on, or B, getting into college. And it sounds like getting into college, honestly.
It – I mean, yeah, I think also, like, it's something that a lot of people have, like, either tried out for a while or – you know, have like really like looked into. And I just, again, I felt really compelled to apply because I wanted to make a bigger difference in the industry to represent people with chronic illnesses. Yeah. Because the truth is 75% of people in America live with a chronic illness and we don't talk about it enough. So
I also, sorry to cut you off, but yeah. I do want to get into that a little bit because obviously that is, you know, part of your passion in life is representing these like invisible chronic illnesses. And I think it's really cool that also Sports Illustrated is making, like, you could see in the finalists, like a concerted effort to actually be more inclusive and not just have these like hot, skinny girls who, you know, Kendall Jenners, you know, it's like they're also having people who have something to say. Yeah. And part of your journey is this chronic illness stuff. So if you want to just start talking to that, like, I think it's a really important, interesting, you know, difficult, but interesting part of your journey.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess, yeah, I've mentioned chronic illness a lot. I was diagnosed with a chronic illness called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome at 11 years old, 10 or 11. I can't remember. I was a child. And I, again, was like very fortunate to get this diagnosis because I do live in New York City. I do have access to like the best doctors in the world. I have access to really great healthcare and insurance. And I know that that's like a privilege that not many people talk about and recognize really because it's like sort of assumed in a big metropolitan city, but part of my advocacy now kind of stems in like making resources and tools for people that don't necessarily have that so they can like they can advocate for themselves best in places. But essentially, I was diagnosed at a young age. I went through high school and middle school with, you know, ailments and braces and physical therapy, and I was so ashamed of it, and it was something that like I never wanted to talk about. When people would ask me like where I was going or if I could have plans after school, like hang out, I was always like, no, I'm going to like meet my mom for lunch, when I was really like going to doctor's appointments. And like I didn't want people to think poorly of me because I was like always sick, but like I also was a kid and didn't really understand, and I was like, I'm in pain but I don't know what to do. Like, it was just like a whole thing. And I couldn't necessarily be taken out of school so much, so it had to be after school a lot of the time, or like on the days off that they would give you for school. So that was definitely a really challenging thing to handle growing up. And it wasn't really until I got to USC, honestly, where I started facing people not really taking my conditions seriously and not really understanding like how bad chronic migraines can be and how bad chronic pain can be and how you can't even get out of bed sometimes. So,
which is interesting because you'd think in California with all the woo-woo shit they'd be more understanding. Yeah, of like I have an actual disability. I have something that I'm dealing with. I don't know. It's interesting that it was, sorry, continue though.
Don't apologize, but it is very interesting to think about. I mean, I was at freaking USC, like they have Keck School of Medicine. Like,
exactly.
It's not like these teachers shouldn't be educated on how to deal with students that are sick. So
yeah,
you know, they have diversity inclusion training mostly on ethnic and racial, I think, backgrounds, but they oftentimes will forget. I'm not speaking for USC specifically, but oftentimes I believe institutions leave out invisible disability when it comes to diversity and inclusion in their training. So hopefully that changes. And hopefully, again, people like myself can be that point of contact where like they have somebody to advocate for the students, because I'm, you know, 23, I'm still working towards my master's. I will graduate next spring. And it's just kind of like it gives me a lot of clarity. And I also think it's really interesting because we're at a point in time where Gen Z kind of steps up and is not afraid to confront institutions, because we're like, okay, if you want to take away my degree, fine, I'll go to the press about it. Like, we're really ruthless in that sense, the same way that people are ruthless on TikTok, you know? Like, I feel like
people are so ruthless on TikTok.
Yeah. And part of that is because we're advocating for ourselves more than ever, and people might be like, oh, well, you're too sensitive. Like, don't go off the beaten path. But like, why not? Like, a lot of people are consistently told like you have a linear path. And I think Gen Z is really like, no, we don't.
I mean, that is something that's very different about our generation that I think is amazing, that people are like more open to having different kinds of paths, which is something that I feel like institutions, you know, especially ones that have their roots that extend very far into the past, are having trouble, you know, dealing with. What were some of like the specific things? Was it just like they weren't allowing you to take days off or like have extra time to complete an assignment? Like, how did that look for you?
Yeah. Well, pre-pandemic, I think, is a very different world than post-pandemic or current pandemic. I don't know, whatever lived experience is
whatever
now
we're in,
is completely different than what it was formerly. So before, you know, if I had the option to do class remotely or have a Zoom meeting remotely, like, I may have been better, you know? I may not have gotten as sick as I got. If I was able to, like, use my, like, these teachers were like, you can't use your laptop. And I was like, it's literally in my 504 disability accommodations. So, like, fuck off. But, like, what?
Literally, no.
Like, literally, like, she would say that in front of the students. And like, we ended, like, after I made my work and like literally presented it, like, all the students were like, oh yeah, this is my project. And I was like, oh, I'm still not sure. But like, I was very well sure of what I was doing. And I was going to a support group to take photos of a local support group for people who live with Ehlers-Danlos in the local LA area. And I'm glad that I was able to connect with them. But I like came into class with this project of like 30 images, and I just like plastered them on the wall. And my teacher walks in and her jaw drops when I'm like, yeah, like, this is the support group of people that deal with the same shit that I deal with. And my point is that invisible disabilities look different to everybody. And her jaw was literally like,
hell yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, I was gonna say one thing for like perspective on it, with, you know, what you've been diagnosed with, how common is it, you know? Because I think a lot of people probably just don't even realize, you know, how many people, I don't know if there's like one in however many people or if it's more common in men or women or anything like that, but just, I'm sure people would love to know that too.
I'm actually not sure how many. I can look it up. Let me look it up. Hold that thought.
Holding.
Also, what does it look like for you specifically? Like, what are some of the things you deal with that make it harder to kind of like get through the day to day?
There's a couple of things. So it looks like about 1 in 5,000 people have EDS, which is Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. Yeah. And essentially, it also says it used to be, at least when I was diagnosed, rare to be diagnosed. Mm. And it was considered rare a decade ago. I mean, that's crazy that I can say that. That was like a decade ago, and I've been living with it for that long. But more and more people are finding out that they have this and are being diagnosed as more research comes out. So it's rare to be diagnosed still. Mm. And once you're diagnosed, it's rare to find a care team that understands it, because it's still not universally understood. Yeah. So that is something that is really challenging for a lot of people. And I try to share my experience living with EDS because also it's so subjective, and what it looks like for me can look so different for someone else. But sometimes, I mean, I have perpetual chronic pain. Like, my body is just always in pain and fatigued. So I take medicine now, which really helps me. And I used to have a really messed up relationship with medicine because when I would take it, it would make me nauseous, so I wouldn't eat. And then I was like in LA and I felt really skinny, and like people were telling me I was hot. So then I like would continue to not eat, and it was just like not good. Yeah. And then I would like binge. It was just bad, bad, bad. So I have a healthier relationship with food where I'm like, okay, you need to eat breakfast like with your medicine. You like, you can't skip breakfast or else you'll be like sick later. And that's been something I've been hesitant to talk about online, just because, again, with EDS, it's so specific. So I try to talk about things generally. So what works for me might not work for the next person, might not work for the next person. Yeah. Like, it's so different. And I also really try to integrate holistic things like breath work, ice, sauna, swimming, like, you know, massage, acupuncture, supplements. All of those things are very helpful, even if it's just managing my stress level, which like in turn helps my pain, because like the more that I learn about pain, it's very individual. Nobody fully understands it, but what we do know is it's usually caused by environmental factors and or it's exacerbated by that. So if, you know, it's cold out, that's something that my body sees as a fight or flight. So it sends signals from my like hands or wherever it feels it to my brain saying, okay, you are in pain right now. And from there, it kind of like, you know, that's like what causes the overall like chronic pain. At least that's how they explained it to me in from my psychologist.
It's interesting because I feel like I've met so many people recently with Lyme disease, and I feel like it's super similar in the way it affects people, where like,
yeah,
there are all these illnesses that are just coming to light, and maybe that's why some people don't take them as seriously, because there's not as much research behind them and people think people are overreacting. But like, I know, you know, as someone who has like different ailments that affect me, Nina, you've like some allergy stuff, random stuff, but yeah, it can really affect you on a day to day, and things like, you know, migraines, as you were saying, or pain, when it's chronic, it is debilitating.
Yeah, I mean, I can't even imagine, because I get migraines, but I get like 2 a year and that's it. Yeah. But there, I can't even imagine having it, because I'm out of commission, completely out of commission, and like brain doesn't work for like at least 48 hours. Yeah. Like, so I can't even imagine that being any more frequent than that.
Yeah. I've also had like long hauler COVID stuff where, I mean, if you can't tell by some of my responses, like I really do have brain fog still. And it's crazy the way that can impact you in the long term. Yeah. So yeah, I can only imagine dealing with it from such a young age.
Things are debilitating, and I've been more outspoken about my chronic migraines in the past 2 years because I've had more debilitating experiences where like I will literally like lose my speech if I get a migraine. Like I like can't, like I'm so disoriented that like that happens. I get visual migraines, so like I really can't do anything visual. And it's scary to me because like obviously being like a visual well-spoken person is like my job, but if I get a migraine, it's like I can't do anything. But that's like one thing that's invisible. The other thing that's invisible again is chronic pain. It's like you can't do anything, like you're stuck in bed. Even like getting the right kind of desk chair is something that I think is important. Making sure you have a heating pad or an ice pack. Like those are little things that you can do, or like that I do, that help me get through my day, that like I'm sure for anybody working from home, people have been complaining about their backs hurting because they've been sitting down for a long enough time. Like sometimes like that just is how like I have to do most things. So
it was interesting too, and we kind of talked about this previously, how things changed for you during the pandemic because people became so much more accommodating and everything being virtual became so much easier.
Yeah, this is like complicated because again, like I mentioned before, even in academics or in workplace, the way that people are taking away the accommodations that they gave to everybody. And this also plays into like the long COVID people, which is like long COVID people are seen as regular people who have now gotten a chronic thing versus, and they're being accommodated versus disabled people who have been asking for it and trying to advocate for years, like are just, it's kind of being taken away from us. It's like, okay, well, like, and for me, I'm like, well, it's hard because I'm like these new people with long COVID, like they have chronic conditions. So I want to advocate for them as well. But where I really advocate for is the people that like have lived with it for a long time, not to say that they can't live together, but it's a really interesting thing where workplace now is saying, you know, I'm going to take away your Zoom meetings, or like in the fall, USC is like, we're fully in person and they're not going to offer hybrid. And it's like, well, what about the chronic student, what about the students with chronic illnesses that, you know, have been able to get straight A's because they've been able to do class from home versus, you know, not being able to get straight A's, getting B's, getting C's because they had to go in person and harm their health, right? So like, that is a really, really challenging thing to do because I think for some students, potentially maybe even like the normies, I guess, like regular people.
I love that nickname. Normies. Start using that.
Yeah, I don't really like, I don't know. I felt like weird saying it, but it was so cringe. So cringe. But basically like those kinds of people are being accommodated, and those were the people that didn't do well with Zoom. So it's like, well, why can't we do hybrid? And it's like, because people are not necessarily interested. I mean, even professors are able to Zoom from wherever they are in the world. Like it's opened a whole new world for academics, for professionals, for students, and for kids under, you know, high school and below, I would say, it's amazing for them to get back in person for sure. Mm-hmm. Let's be more respectful about accommodations. And if somebody has to do a Zoom day, then they do a Zoom day, right? Totally. Like, I don't see a problem with that. What I see a problem with it is like completely taking away from everybody, including the people who have benefited from it. And that's what I'm trying to help advocate for and push forward. And in May, there will be a very big announcement for me that I think will play into that a little bit more. Oh my God, there's like a hawk right outside. You guys know what that means. That means good vibes.
Living in Riverdale.
That's good vibes. Yeah, living in Riverdale is like I'm in a jungle bird watching every day. There's hawks, there's eagles,
just
there's
another
falcons.
Day in Riverdale. Outside the city.
Outside the city. I'm like, animals, what are those?
So yeah, I think that is going to be just something that you know, I will for sure be more outspoken about in the future, as well as trying to advocate for people at the very least at my university at USC, and then further pushing that out to other mental health resource programs on a university level, because it's just it's unfair and it's so frustrating. And I think there's so many case studies that show that disabled people have been able to live better with these accommodations from the pandemic, and the regular world is just like, nah, we want to like take that away. Because it makes us uncomfortable.
Do you feel like social media has helped, you know, kind of champion people with disabilities, people with chronic illnesses? Because I know obviously there's so much talk about like the negative sides of social media, but so much of what you do and why people follow you is probably, you know, A, because you're awesome and funny and great, but also because you represent so many people that probably haven't felt represented. And so, you know, I wonder what you kind of see as social media's role in standing up for people that are dealing with invisible pain and all these different things.
Yeah, I think there's like a lot of different things that have been helpful for me. Social media has been instrumental in helping me build a community for and by people with chronic illnesses for the most part, and having messages from kids like across the world in Australia or over the pond in Britain and, or the UK and, you know, so on and so forth, where people see my content and are like, because of you, like, I feel confident to ask my doctors or advocate for myself in a certain way. And it helped me get a diagnosis, or it helped me get the accommodation that I needed to get. Yeah. And I think that social media, like that wouldn't be possible without social media. It all starts with Facebook groups. That's how, back to you know, my project in college. Like, that's how I met the group of people in the local LA areas. Like, I looked for a support group and I sought that out. And the only way I knew to do it at the time was on Facebook. So yeah, there was that. And then I started posting about it online. And that's where people were like, holy shit, me too. And I was like, whoa, that's pretty crazy that so many people deal with this and don't talk about it enough and struggle. And that's where, again, I started seeing momentum on social. I don't want to say that I fully capitalized on it, but I think the pandemic propelled so many more people to be on their phones and to confront the things that were already going on with themselves or people that they know and be like, oh yeah, like, hey Bob, like my friend Gigi has the same chronic illness as you, or she has a chronic illness. She's really positive. Like, why don't you follow her? And like those kinds of relationships kept happening in and around me. So I think that like that was just kind of why social media propelled that forward. In terms of like, is it a harmful thing? I think anything can be harmful. It's about in moderation. And that's something that humans are still learning, is like, what's the perfect moderate, like, amount of social media before it harms us, and how much can we withstand and handle? I mean, even like the influx of DMs or the influx of people messaging me from a video, as positive as it is and as happy as I am that it's helping people, I personally don't have the capacity to message everyone. Then does that make me feel like I'm failing my community? Like, I have to choose how I feel about that, right? So I, yeah, a lot of the time I'm like, okay, yeah, like I have helped people as much as I can, but I don't have the spoons to help you. And for anyone that doesn't know, spoon theory is essentially like you have 10
spoons. I love spoon theory. Okay, my friend Sophie told me about it, but yeah, please explain it. I think it's great.
Spoon theory is essentially like, let's say a regular person has 10 spoons or 10 fingers on their hands, right? And you only have 10 spoons to get through everything you need to get through the day. People with chronic illnesses usually start around 7 spoons. So you have 7 spoons to get through the day. Let's say you have to shower and like brush your teeth and do all the self-care. That's a spoon. Let's say eating and preparing food is 2. Let's say doing your homework. Okay, that's another one. Or like your work. Let's say moving your body. Okay, that's another one. How about talking to friends, socializing? Okay, that's another one. Now we only have 1 spoon left. Do we clean our or do our laundry? Do we decide to go for a second walk? Do we put makeup on? I mean, and that kind of idea changes per person, but it becomes a quantifiable way for somebody to set their boundaries in terms of how much they can actually do in one day. And I think that more and more people should kind of utilize it.
Yeah, I think it's awesome also from like a mental health perspective, because I think, you know, with things like depression, like, I mean, that's something I struggle with personally. And it's so crazy because just like having that condition already makes you have less spoons. So people who don't understand that, it's like, why are you being lazy? It's like, no, I don't have the energy or the ability to actually like go through with this. So I think it's something that, you know, helps on so many levels for people to like understand people's capacity to do just day-to-day things. I love that you could explain it. And I'm so glad that you are out there, you know, getting this message across. And I feel like the Sports Illustrated exposure is just going to help that so much more, which is awesome too.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move into quarter life qualms. I do want to talk about dating a little bit because I know it's something you're interested in. So first question is, what has dating looked like for you in your 20s, especially as someone who, you know, both deals with these illnesses, but also is a public presence?
It's a disaster.
Okay, let's hear about it.
Yeah, well, it's been something that I've honestly struggled with forever because I'm a very like career and work and self-motivated person. So I never, I don't want to say that all relationships are about like external validation from somebody that you end up like loving, but like in college it kind of is. And it's kind of like an exchange of like, you know what I'm talking about. And like, I didn't really like feel the urge to like spend time looking for somebody to like mess around with when I was like
why would I do that if I could work at Warner Bros? Like, it seemed like a waste of time for me to, like, invest energy into trying to, like, pursue somebody or, you know,
put myself out there.
And exactly. And when I was dealing with my health, and that's another thing that's really big in the chronic illness community is, like, well, am I desirable? Am I, like, not that I'm not worthy, but, like, nobody's going to want to deal with a sick person. Like, that's a big thing that people kind of overlook is, like, if you look normal and – or normal, if you look like you don't have anything wrong with you, people kind of assume that you're okay, and then you end up having all these issues, and then someone's like, wait, I don't want to do that. I don't want to take care of that. Like, I don't want to have your kids in the future. Like, what if our kids have this problem? And that's something that I think as I get older, and I say this, like, with a grain of salt because I'm 23, but, like, as I'm growing up a little bit more, it becomes more real to think about the future and to think about, like, oh, well, even if I wanted to have kids in the future, like, physically, can I do that? You know, and how is that going to make me feel? I mean, that's nowhere near any, I don't think that would happen for over 10 years, but still, like, there's so much that I want to do that my chronic illness hinders me from. And I honestly just have not been interested in adding another person to the mix when it comes to that. Cause I'm, like, a very all or nothing kind of girl. Like, I don't like half-ass people in general. So that's kind of challenging. Also, dating in New York is challenging. Dating virtually was, like, just, like, it was horrible. Like, so superficial and stupid. And, like, with the pandemic, I couldn't gauge how to, like, be like, oh, well, are you seeing other people? Do you have COVID? Like, have you been exposed to COVID? Like, I live with my, you know, old parents. Like, I don't want to bring COVID home to them. Like, you know, it's been a very challenging 2 years, I would say. I think there's times where I'm like, oh, well, should I, like, get onto any apps? And then I've, like, been on Hinge. And then this, like, one guy was, like, trying to convert me to Scientology. And I was like,
wait, what?
Yeah, it was a wild story.
Worst case scenario.
Yeah, that's, he was like, that's not a good place.
He was like,
from.
I see you don't drink. Why is that? And I was like, oh, I have a chronic illness and I take medicine that I can't drink on. He's like, I don't drink either, but not for that reason. I don't drink because I follow the Church of Science and alcohol is poison. And I was like, okay, sir.
I mean, Scientology is crazy. When I was in LA, when I was auditioning, they always would be posting on the, you know, various auditioning websites.
Wild.
And they paid really well, but they wouldn't say it was, like, you had to read between the lines to realize it was, like, a Scientology promo thing.
That's fascinating. And I, you know what? If it makes someone happy, then it makes someone happy.
That's really funny, though. Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I love what you had to say about just the idea that, like, we all already carry baggage and then, like, adding that to the mix. It's hard because it's, like, you get to know someone, you get to know their baggage. But, it's, again, like, I just relate on a mental health level. Like, you get worried about the genetics of it, someone else taking on your issues. It feels burdensome. But
yeah,
I like to remind myself that everyone has their shit. But it's hard. Some of it's like you have to find a person that's really willing to accommodate those differences.
And we're, like, so trained as a society to act like we don't have shit.
Yeah.
So it's so, especially with dating, it's so hard to tell if someone's not just perfectly put together.
And on top of that, there's, like, some certain kind of fucked up toxic person that, like, enjoys being the, like, person that kind of likes to be, like, the savior complex of, like, I'm gonna save you, or, like, I'm gonna be the person that, like, does everything for you. And it's like, what is that balance of, like, being a good, like, partner versus being, like, a caregiver versus being somebody that just wants to, like, control you and make themselves feel good? And that's, like, a fear, because a lot of people with disabilities and chronic illnesses face toxic people like that, because at first it seems like somebody who's just taking care and helping you and being there for you, and then it turns into something where it's like they get this validation from instead of, like, a partnership. Yeah, it's, like, crazy stories that I've heard. So, but yeah, so it's been interesting. I don't know how to even further talk about it, really, because it's like I want to date, but also I'm, like, super not into it because I have all of this health stuff and I'm just like, if something happens, it's just going to happen naturally and I'm not putting any pressure on myself. Like, literally, like, my parents didn't meet until they were, like, 35. So, like, I
really
am, like, My parents are older, but that makes me feel better. I kind of like it that way because like it gives me less pressure and I don't want to go through like a million heartbreaks. So I'm like, okay, I'll just focus on myself until I'm ready. And once everything's set up with my career, like once I like, not that I need to do any more than I do, but I, you know, have a lot of goals that I want to make happen. And until that happens, I'm not interested in bringing someone else in unless they only like add to my pie, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a very mature point of view, especially for being the age you are. Yeah. So that's awesome.
And,
yeah.
And I will say like part of that I believe is because I grew up with a chronic illness advocating for myself and always putting my health first and then putting school second and then putting my friends third and then putting anything separate, anything interesting, so, like socially after my friends, like dating, was always the last priority because my career, my health, my education, like those are all priorities versus dating is just something that's like fun and on the side. Like I'm completely self-sufficient and not that I need to rely on anybody, but also being like a strong, independent woman like scares people because like, you know, like you provide for yourself so much that it's like you don't need someone else to provide. And like men like to provide, like just like, I guess, like, what is it, like animalistically?
No, it's so crazy just, like, how much those gender roles still
they still exist.
Yeah, into modern day dating. I was watching Ali Wong's new stand-up special. Yeah. And she was talking about, she was like, how many guys here have fucked a woman who like makes more money than them? And it was like, there is no wooing from the crowd. You know, it's like, there still is that kind of standard that you're going to be the provider, which is so antiquated and so fucked up. But
I mean, we see it in stand-up all the time.
That's the other thing. She was saying how, like, guys will stay in stand-up even though there's not, like, a ton of money because they have, like...
They get the best girls.
They get the girls after, and then the girls are like, welp.
No, it's so funny. Literally, we get, like, stalkers, and guys get, like, 10 out of 10s. Like, so many of my friends date comedians, and they're, like... girls that are 10 out of 10s and I'm like, what? And then the guys that come up to me, I'm like, I'll be murdered. Like, that's what will happen.
Yeah, that's what she was talking about, which is, just a reflection of society at this point, which is not so great. But I do want to move on to the next question so we have time, but do you want to take it from here, Nina?
Yeah, so obviously we know you're really passionate about mental health, but what has your mental health journey been in your 20s, and how have you just kind of boosted your confidence along the way with so many obstacles?
Since you are so confident, and I feel like that's like part of your brand.
Yeah,
it absolutely is. I mean, one of the biggest things that I always talk about is like shooting your shot and just going for it, because even if you're shy, like you can still message somebody and you could still be a very passive person, but you could land the role of your dreams. And it's like really cool to see people on my team, like just message people to get informational interviews. And just because they like went for it with like a positive, open-ended, like, I really don't want anything from you, like attitude other than like a meeting, lands them roles or gives them other opportunities. And I think that that's like super, super interesting because I think it's like a philosophy and it'll be built out and replicated in the near future. But like my mental health, I would say, has always kind of mirrored my chronic illness. So like I've always gone to therapy, like since I was in second grade, before I even had my chronic illness diagnosis, I was seeing a therapist and I really enjoyed therapy because it just like is an outlet and that's really all it is. And it's somebody that gives you tools for your toolbox if you need help talking at different times. Throughout college, when I was in USC, like in LA, it was actually really challenging because I couldn't fit it into my schedule with all my clubs, the e-boards, like everything was just like so challenging for me. And then it was even more challenging when teachers didn't believe me. So that's when I really sought help from like the lifestyle redesign people in occupational therapy, as well as regular therapy, physical therapy, and it's just something that I love. And I have not really been clinically like diagnosed with any mental health issues. Yeah. However, I again see a therapist currently. I've been seeing her for like over a year, and she helps specifically with pain management. So now my mental health is around like stress management, lifestyle redesign, holistically looking at like whatever ailment it is that you have, how can you analyze it and like maybe do some breath work to reset your nervous system and see if like any thoughts are coming up. As the thoughts are coming up, are you scanning your body and seeing like how is your pain level, or like after you eat something, what's causing you to like, you know, run to the bathroom or like to burp or like whatever, like seeing all of those things and taking note has been something that's helped my mental health, because it makes my body feel better. When my body feels better, my mind is better. When my mind is better, I can think clearer, speak clearer, do more school clearer. It's like literally mind body connection. Mind body connection has been like the biggest learning thing for me. And it's really been something that shifted a lot. Same with, writing in a journal. I was talking about this morning, but like the real interesting, like I think paradox between entertainment and media, even showing journals on TV is always something that people write about. And it's about your crush and your deepest, darkest secrets are in the journal, which can still be true, but it's always like a 16-year-old girl who's doing it versus like in reality.
So many
people can journal. And I think it's something that like empowers people and they should use. Like I literally have 3, 4, 5 journals on this desk, and one is for my breath work sessions, and I write down how I feel before and after each session, a couple sentences, super simple. Then I have one that's specific for my diet. Then I have one that's like manifestation and mindset. Then I have another one that's more of like a goals, like for my business kind of thing. Like I have all of these different notebooks, and I take it old school because it is that physical, like going from your mind like out to something you're creating, and then you're putting it out there, and then like it can happen and you're working towards it subconsciously. So that's been definitely an interesting thing and a tool that's really helped me. But again, it's this thing that I think we've been like force fed for so long with media, where they're telling us that like, you know, we should be ashamed of writing in a diary, and like that's just not true. So anyway, that's what helps me with my mental health.
That's awesome. Do you think we should wrap up with a quarter life qualm, or do you want to do the fuck, marry, kill?
I think we should do the game.
Okay, we're going to do the game. So basically, to finish up the interview, we're going to do fuck, marry, kill, but we're going to do it with pop culture stuff. Do you want to do the first one?
Okay, so the first one is fuck, marry, kill, TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube.
Yeah, fuck TikTok, marry Instagram, and kill YouTube.
Are you on YouTube at all? You are, right?
I am, but it's like a slow and very intricate process. And that's the meeting I'm running to after is actually with them. So, this is timely. But I love YouTube. I do love YouTube.
You're like, YouTube, don't write me off.
YouTube, don't get mad at me.
Okay, next one. Real Housewives, Kardashians, whether the new one or Keeping Up, and Selling Sunset.
I guess I'll just go with Mary Sunset and kill the other two because I really don't care.
Just kill both. None of them are fuckable. I feel like I don't really want to fuck any of them either. I would fuck Selling Sunset, but also marry them.
I would fuck Selling Sunset, but I feel like they can be a little toxic, so I don't know if I need that in my life permanently.
Yeah, that's true. But it's really bingeable, and I think we like it from afar.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, it's easier there.
It's also pretty. Just like everything is pretty.
Yeah. Okay, Harry Styles, MGK, or Timothy Chalamet?
Or Timothy Chalamet?
Yeah.
That's such a random mix.
I know. Lineup. I know.
I think I would have to fuck Timmy, marry Harry, and kill MGK.
MGK. I really agree with that. MGK, I don't understand.
I don't either, but the girlies love him.
Yeah, I'm like, whatever.
It's really weird.
Float to your boat. Okay, so next one is really gonna hit home. Okay, journaling, breath work, and infrared saunas.
Wow, yeah, that's so definitely random. A good one. I would probably marry breath work, kill the sauna, and what was the other one? Fuck journaling.
Journaling. Incredible. And then for the last one, for type of guys, finance bro, startup founder, or actor, comedian, creator.
Stop. This is hard.
she's like, kill all three.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't know. None of those guys sound really cool. I'm like so tied like with all of them.
She's gonna focus on her career.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry guys, I'm gonna focus on my career. I'm gonna dip out on that.
But would you rather be with a guy who does something similar to you or someone who like does something really different in terms of career?
I have no idea. Like I've never the one like person that I was with for like 6-ish, 8 months that was like,
oh my god, I thought a really shitty person.
Was like very like anti-social media and it did not make me feel good. So it would have to be somebody that I think can handle like public stuff. Definitely. Yeah, yeah. But like it's not necessary. However, they need to be like cool with coming to events and like yeah, being
so they don't photos. Need to have your job, but they need to respect it, which
yeah.
totally makes
yeah.
sense.
I mean, I just think it's like about respecting powerful women in general.
Yes, 100%. And then to close out the interview, what is something that you would give our listeners advice with for being in their 20s and maybe something you wish you'd known when you were a little bit younger, even though I know you're still in your early 20s?
Yeah, I feel like just like take your time. Like I've like rushed myself so much with so much. Like literally like when I was back on UMSC's campus last week, I was like, damn, like, so that's what they meant when they said, like, enjoy every moment. It's going to be gone in a blink of an eye. Like, it really was. And I was there and I was, like, reminiscing and, like, damn, I'm old now. Like, what the heck? It's kind of crazy. So, like, take your time and enjoy it and have the time with friends. And don't be afraid to, like, speak up if something is happening that you're not okay with. I think that's definitely important, too.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Gigi. We'll let you get to your important meetings and interviews. Do you want to let the listeners know where they can find you, how they can follow you, and get some of your awesome advice and see your Sports Illustrated photos, of course?
Well, thanks for the fun episode. I'm happy to be on and to hang out with you guys. You all can Google me simply, however, you go to my website. But if you just want to find me, all my social media handles are just like the @ symbol and then it's Gigi Robinson. And then my podcast is Everything You Need Is Within on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, whatever, everything.
Anywhere you find
that's
your podcast.
The tea. Yeah, thank you.
And yeah, as always, follow me at CKNY1213 and the podcast at WTFSupPod.
You can follow me. It's just at Nina Barnett, NINABARNETT.
All right. Bye, guys.